common. You know, have you ever disagreed with someone about what's allowable behavior? And, you know, the chapter really encourages us to come at it with love. And I'm both convicted by that. It also doesn't say, though, it doesn't deny Paul was really one who ate meat and thought it was fine. So he wasn't saying both positions were right. He was talking about how we love one another. So I've just been thinking about how that applies in the work we're trying to do together in faith-driven investing.
Welcome to the Faith-Driven Investor Podcast. If you're a fund manager, investor, or financial advisor driven by your faith or want to be, then you're in the right place. And if after the podcast you're hungry for more, we'd love for you to join us at our virtual conference, Faith-Driven Investor Live on September 9th. We're hosting local watch parties in more than 100 cities around the world to stream the conference with other investors in your communities. Learn more by visiting faithdriveninvestorlive.org.
All opinions expressed on this podcast, including the team and guests, are solely their opinions. Host and guest may maintain positions in the companies and securities discussed. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as specific investment advice for any individual or organization.
Welcome back to the Faith-Driven Investor Podcast. I'm here with Luke, my partner at Sovereigns Capital. Luke, welcome.
Wonderful to be here.
It's great to have you back. And we've got Dave Beatty in the house all the way from Boston, Massachusetts. Dave, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Henry.
So today's a big deal. We're going to get into an asset class and an investment strategy that is doubly new. Number one, we rarely talk about public equity investing. And then as a subset of that, we've never talked about direct index investing. And so we're going to do both of those. And the reason why I think that this is super important is that while we all do get excited about private equity investments because of the ability to work with the company owner and being able to really talk about chaplaincy and faith-driven employee resource groups and just the individual discipleship of the entrepreneur that we're working with, most private equity investments are not accessible to 90% plus people that would want to get into faith-driven investments. The minimums are too high. The lockups are too long. Whole list of reasons why a lot of times private equity investments aren't accessible. And yet what we're coming to understand through the leadership of people like Dave and others is that we can get a lot of the spiritual integration we're looking for in our portfolio from public equities as well. And that's because public equities are run by Christ followers. Many of them are. Where there is somebody like a Pat Gelsinger from VMware who's really serious about his faith and really serious about excellence in the work that he does, and there's just great spiritual integration at play. And to help us to understand the world of public equity investments, and then in particular, as I said before, direct index investments, we've got Dave Beatty with us on the program. So Dave, thank you very much for joining.
I love the topic. Love you, Henry, and I look forward to the discussion.
Thank you, brother. So before we get into what you do right now, Verity, Daintree, some of your experience, start at the beginning. Who are you? Where do you come from? You found yourself on the Faith-Driven Investor Podcast, so presumably your Christian faith is a part of your life. When did it start? Help us understand who Dave Beatty is.
Well, you know, I'm an old guy, so I should think what's really relevant here. Maybe I'll organize it by some places that were turning points for me in faith that connected with values or places, kind of the nexus of faith and vocation, kind of around that. I'm remembering when I was probably like 13, you know, I'm in middle school, which means it's already difficult, right? And my family was one of those that prayed at meals, but never any other time really. And I only prayed when I needed something. And yeah, I remember this distinct realization, like, this probably isn't how it's supposed to work. Either I need to be all in or I'm not in on this thing. You know, kind of a matter of my conscience, right? And so actually soon after that, I really went deeper with God. So that's one turning point I remember. And then another one would be in college. And I was good at science and I chose to do the humanities and history and government and that kind of thing. This isn't the way you should think about things. I'm just confessing how I was thinking, gee, you know, if you're a scientist, you just get stuck in a lab and you're not really at where decisions are made and where you have those choices about what matters and have influence for God. And I thought, so I studied history and so forth. So odd thought process, right? And then I think in grad school, kind of a similar thought process. And I studied not-for-profit management, or at least that's what I started at business school. And it was very conscious, you know, like, how can I make a difference for God? I'm not saying that was a good choice. In fact, I found out it wasn't later, because later in my 20s, I was working for a not-for-profit, and I was a controller, and I just had this distinct impression, you know, I'm really not making a difference here, and this doesn't really suit me. So I quit my job and just did consulting while I kind of took a semi-sabbatical and sought God and read books. And I mean, I'm an action guy, so doing this is actually kind of hard, you know, like take time to think about it and talk to people and pray, you know. And I kind of realized, I think I want to go into finance. It's where I have talents, it's where I have interest, and there's all sorts of moral ambiguity and ways to influence things for God. So that's when I got engaged. I could tell kind of how that path went, but eventually it ended up, I started a company, a multifamily office.
Say that last part again. I'm finding myself just kind of gravitated towards that statement. I'm drawn into finance because I'm good at it, I'm interested in it, and there's all this moral ambiguity. Say more about that.
Well, it was the sense, I was thinking of going into personal financial advice for people. And I saw how, you know, the typical advisor was somebody at Goldman Sachs or Merrill Lynch. And I kind of comprehended the conflicts involved and how could it be done differently. And I was just like, there are unending questions of what it means to follow God in those circumstances. I'm interested in that.
So if you're at Goldman Sachs, maybe I'm being presumptuous or prescriptive here, but if you're at one of the traditional warehouses and you get paid on assets under management, is probably morally ambiguous for you to think about suggesting that your client lean into their heart and give away $20 million to their favorite African orphanage.
It can be giving the money away. And of course, you know, I'm an old guy, so this is back when commissions were dominant. So just the fact of you got paid on whatever you recommended. And that was a conflict. Yeah. And I actually started out wanting to study taxes because a lot of taxes permeated issues and they were often ignored. And that's kind of a backdrop for how I happened to be at Verity doing direct indexing too.
Gotcha.
Yeah. It's a matter of conscience, you know, and that's part of what we're dealing with in faith-driven investing.
So direct indexing is something that's probably a new concept for some of the listeners of the podcast. Could you give them just a brief overview of what it is, how it works, and then how you use it as sort of a screen or filter for some of your clients?
Sure. First of all, know that it's just hot right now. The two biggest companies in the space are being sold, and that's just got announced in the last couple of months. And that's Parametric and Aperio, and I could talk more about that. Direct indexing's been around for quite a while, but not really big, so it's natural you might not have heard of it. It really means you're acquiring the public equities in a separately managed account, but think of it as mimicking what an index fund or an ETF would do. So I would describe it as riding three waves, the passive wave or indexing, the second wave would be tax efficient, and the third wave would be around values and ESG and all that. It's writing all those waves in one package. And I could explain how it works, but that's the big picture of what it's doing.
How individualized is your approach at Verity? Or is it something where, you know, you got a menu and people choose off the menu, or do you actually consult with them to try to understand for believers who are clients or others who are values driven in different ways? Maybe just speak to a little bit of how you help folks arrive at the right product, so to speak.
Yeah. Typically, Luke, what do most people do? That's where people start because it's so complicated. What do most people do? They just want to know it's possible. That's the first step. But if you really want to get into it, you can customize it however you want. So yeah, we have menus. My goodness, we had we really have advisors are our clients and they're end clients. So this is an end client working with an advisor, and they're coming from some faith perspective, but they're also Armenian. And they were like, I don't want to invest in Turkey. So they went deep down that path, and now they have nothing.
That's a niche.
Yeah. So they could express that in their portfolio, and that was tremendously satisfying and motivating for them.
So that's an example. This goes hand in hand with some of the other things that might be obvious to some about investing in terms of tax harvesting and some of the other controls that you give. And maybe just go through that real quickly. So somebody listening is saying, I think I get it. So I can invest in an index. I understand that the index tends to beat 2/3 of the financial managers anyway. And indexing can have really, really low expenses. Okay. Help me to understand, what are the 3 or 4 things that a Parametric or a Verity can provide you that make this really super compelling in such a hot space right now?
Yeah, that's a good way to ask it, Henry. I find most people, they can't get to the values until they understand the core part. So let's say you didn't even care about the value slice. Like I said, two waves. One is just, it's an index product. You want to get the results of the index. And let's say it's the S&P 500. Can I invest in it at low cost? Well, of course you can. You can go buy the SPDR ETF at really low cost or whichever vehicle. So why would you do something else? Well, you can, if you had enough money, you can just go replicate it in your own account. You buy all 500 stocks in the right proportions and you get exactly the results of the index. You can do that. But why would you want to? ETF's just fine. Well, if you had enough money and you can do that at low cost, all of a sudden you can add tax benefits because you can get, first thing we do is we do sampling. You don't have to actually buy all 500 to get the same results. You can buy a couple hundred and using statistics, get very close to the same results. So that's the first step. The next step is, and you still have some oil stocks, you still have some tech stocks, you still have some consumer stocks. But if, you know, classically, if Coke goes up, Pepsi goes down, you can sell Pepsi, buy Coke, and still be mimicking the index. So you can actually harvest losses, sometimes short-term losses, get a tax benefit now, and at least defer taxes. And it's surprising the benefit. And I could go over that. So that's the reason. You have a separate account. You're using sampling. And you get the index results, but better. Even after your expenses, your result after taxes is better than you can get with the ETF. So that's step one. And once somebody becomes convinced of that, we say, well, you also can express your values. And it could be anything. It could just be environmental concerns. It could be your issue is abortion, whatever. Because you're sampling, it helps you imagine it. Oh, you mean I don't have to buy every drug stock? I can avoid Johnson & Johnson that manufactures abortifacients and buy this other drug stock and still have exposures and still get the results of the index a little more, a little less maybe, but really close. Yes, you can do that.
What do you think? I'd love to just have you expound on that a little bit. So if the S&P delivers 8% this year, and you've got someone who is not incorporating their values, how do you think about sort of the BIPs benefit of being able to do tax loss harvesting relative to maybe like an 8% benchmark? And then maybe also talk about two different scenarios. Someone who's really narrowly defined, like I'm really sensitive to abortion and alcohol and tobacco and gambling and all these things. Yeah. How do you think about the likely tracking error for them versus, and then maybe somebody else who's not so narrow, but does have a couple of issues that they're really sensitive to, call it sort of abortion and, you know, maybe gaming.
Perfect, Luke. Okay. So your first part of your question is around essentially the benefits of the tax alpha. Is it really worth it? And then we'll shift to the values. So on the, I'm calling it tax alpha. That's my lingo. You know, you don't know what it investment alpha is. Well, on taxes, if you're saving taxes, we're just calling that the alpha. And you, if you can save present value about 1% a year on your taxes, that's real money. And if the cost of the direct indexing is a fraction of a percent, so your tax benefit is usually multiples of your cost.
So it sounds like kind of 70 or 80 bips on an 8% base. Is that accurate?
Yeah, if you had a target, and remember, we do have tracking here. So if the index got 8%, well, most of the time you might be between 7 and 9. On average, you still have 8. And then you have tax alpha, let's call it on average an extra 1%. Well, after taxes, you're really getting, you know, better. Now, what makes that even, I could give you lots of detail about what makes the tax alpha better or worse. It actually diminishes over time. It's usually a lot more than 1% up front. It's less later. Another thing to understand is if you're charitably minded, I could explain how, but you could double your tax benefit. So it could even be more than that, approximately 1%. So it's for real. It's predictable. You know, investment alpha, hard to predict. Tax alpha, very predictable. Even in up markets, you still get it. So that's the first part. Is it okay to move over to your question on the values?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. If you have those concerns, you listed a few, and yours were kind of the classic conservative Christian, you know, I want to screen out a few things, tobacco, alcohol, etc., abortion, maybe. Those usually, and we could show you a menu and actually how many would drop out of the SP 500 when you did those restrictions. That's not going to increase your tracking error around the index. Every time you take something out, you screen it out, it means you've reduced your universe, which means we have fewer tools to work with in trying to still mimic the index. So yes, it ups your tracking error a bit, Luke, but we can estimate that change. And I've never seen anyone balk it there. When you can have a problem is somebody just says, you know, you're taking lots of stocks out of your universe. Say you say, you know, it's not just, you know, low carbon. It's I don't want anything with carbon in it. You take out all the oil stocks. You start upping your tracking error substantially, et cetera. You can see where I'm going. And we can always estimate that for people ahead of time so they know what they get into. Even in our menu, it kind of shows you how many stocks might I weed out if I have that exclusion.
That's helpful. So Dave, I'm going to ask an obvious question and then I want Henry to chime in. But we have good clarity on why many investors choose not to do either, you know, real estate investing or private equity venture investing just because of the long hold time, illiquid, high beta, or, you know, high binary outcomes. But why doesn't everybody do this? Maybe just speak to that. It seems everybody holds public stocks, or most people hold public stocks. What's the constraining factor?
Really good question. One, there is an issue about minimums. It's so easy to just go buy the ETF, and it's cheap and it's easy. And direct indexing, the minimums are coming down. But typically start thinking you need at least $250,000, $500,000 and a separate account to do it. So that's a deterrent. Most of the rest is, honestly, I just think people becoming accustomed to it. It's really hot now, Luke. Look at the sales that just happened of the two biggest players in the space. There's a reason that the biggest player is Parametric, and their parent, Eaton Vance, was just announced in the last couple of months to be purchased by Morgan Stanley. And just in the last couple of weeks, we heard the second biggest player in the direct indexing space, Aperio, an announcement of their acquisition by BlackRock. And all the biggest players you can think of in financial services are pushing hard into this. They see it answers, you know, the trends in ESG, customization, personalization. It is a big movement. If people aren't paying attention now, they will be.
So if you're listening to this from Goldman Sachs, listen to that. Here's the time. Dave Beatty, Verity Management. They're the number three guy out there in the space. You snooze, you lose. Talk to us as a Christ follower, as you look at and have looked at the public equity market, what are the opportunities that you see for somebody driven by their faith to not only necessarily say, no abortifacients or nothing that makes money on pornography. And actually, before I go there, do you have the ability to, when somebody comes to you and says, listen, I know that I don't want to be involved in pornography, but I have no idea which of the companies in the S&P 500 might benefit from that and where that might be de minimis. Do you have resources, analysts, something where you can come back and say, okay, well, XYZ company gets 2% of their income from adult entertainment, or somebody else gets this a trace amount, but it's less than 1%, maybe it's de minimis. Do you walk people through how they can go ahead and say, okay, yes, that's right, I want to get that screened out, or do they need to come to you having already done their own research?
Most of the time, they come to us and they can work off the menu. And we can help them with that. If you take it, I'm not sure what example to use, but first let me describe what's possible. Even on our menus, we have essentially strict and broader exclusions. So you can say, in this area, I just want to have zero tolerance or very tight. I don't want to get close to abortifacients. In another area, maybe it's around alcohol. You're saying, I'm interested, but help me understand the area. And we could help someone understand. There's the manufacturers, the distributors, here's the impact of advertising in the space. Advertising is the one of the most predatory effects of the industry. You know, it's often very specifically targeted in inner city neighborhoods, next to a high school, etc. You know, we can go through some of those in education about the space, and then we can show them how to apply it. It can have materiality limits that are based on just percentage of revenues. They could have materiality limits that are based on just strict dollar limits. I want no more than X dollars of revenue. Does that give you a window into it, Henry?
No, I think that that's good. So in many cases, you're able to guide somebody through this process. So go then, let's take it to the other place I was headed, which is as a Christ follower, understanding that Christian leaders have an impact to make, have the ability to make an impact in really any sector of life, in the military, in the arts, in government, and then also in business. What does it look like for a Christ follower to say, I want to invest in leaders that share my values? And maybe it doesn't have to do with a specific product or category, but maybe it's the type of leader. Why don't you riff on that a little bit? And just when you see the future of the industry and some of the different things that you're looking on Verity, give us a sneak peek into how you're thinking about advising clients, maybe some of the new product segments that you think might be able to be possible for the faith-driven investor.
And that's going to also tie in, just to interject, that's also going to tie into this idea of how do we move beyond just things that we're trying to stay away of, but how do we identify leaders that are positively impacting the world that they're operating within?
Okay, that's great, Luke. But back to your question, Henry, I have to say, I think you've educated me on that more than I can educate you, because Verity is like these other companies. We start with publicly available databases to help people with their screens. And we don't have good databases on Christian leaders and companies and some of the perspective that you've drawn. We are working on some of those things, but we don't have it off the shelf. So it's not easy. That'd be my first answer on that.
But it's in development. Right?
It's in development, yes, with your help. And there's other places. Look, you're getting to positive and negative screens. Like one of the positive screens we're working on with our partner Brightlight is a positive screen around racial reconciliation. Henry, I know you and your team, you've been very interested in the positive screens and how can we approach it. And that's really appealing. In the past, traditionally, most of the best data is to help with negative screens. We do have positive screens. We have ESG data, and I could talk more about that. There's a lot to talk about there. We have the UN Sustainable Development Goals, the UN SDGs, that we can use positively. But we're working on how we can use more positive screens. But they're all of a piece. The positive and the negative together are what best help the investor apply their values.
Tell us, what does that look like? How do you invest positively towards racial reconciliation? How do you say, gosh, Coca-Cola's program towards racial reconciliation is outstanding, but Delta is not so much, or vice versa? What does that look like?
I'm not going to give you a very complete or intelligent answer yet, although I think we're close to being able to roll it out. But I would say it reflects some of what else we see in the marketplace. The ESG positive screens come from lots of companies. This is a very indirect way of answering. And they're problematic, what the data is. They're usually very dated, 12 to 18 months plus old. They're self-reported. They're defined very differently by different players in the marketplace. The cross-correlations between some MSCI's ESG data and another's is usually in the order of like 0.55 to 0.6 for your, you know, investment people here will understand that's very low correlation. In environmental scores, it's higher. But when you get into the governance ones, like are there women on the board and so forth, there's a few that correlate highly, but the labels are inconsistent. It's very difficult area to apply. So I think the first thing I would admit is this industry still has a long way to go. There's a lot of efforts you may be reading about to try to synchronize how we define ESG and to kind of force a certain point of view on companies about how to approach those issues. And sometimes for a Christian investor, those can be very welcome. And sometimes they may not be, when you dig underneath, they might not align with your values. So I think that's one of the things Verity is trying to work at, is to try to make these things less opaque for the Christian investor so that it can understand them and make those choices. And we're trying to make the right filters and screens available to those Christian investors. Verity serves anyone, I'm saying, but there's a particular gap in the marketplace in what's available to the Christian investor.
Let me just ask it just another kind of fundamental question back to direct investing is, presumably some amount of our listeners are having the wheels turn in their head. Say I am just drawn to regional investing. I want to invest in the heartland. And so out of 500 companies, maybe 220 of them are headquartered not on the coast. And that's just where I'm drawn to. I'm just coming up with an example. If I came to you with a list of 220, could you tell me, if I gave you that list and all the stock symbols get uploaded into this incredible cloud computer that you have, could you then come back to me and say, well, Henry, based on that list, our data would tell you that you're likely to be within 400 basis points of the index or 300. Can you give that type of a sensitivity analysis? Because I'm intrigued by what you're saying before, which is you don't need to have all 500 of the companies to approximate the returns of the S&P 500. You can do it on something less. So does your technology allow us to be able to say, if I give you my custom list, this is how close you can expect to track it with plus or minus an error?
Yes. And that's not Verity technology. We have to layer technology onto the tools in the marketplace. But there are a number of tried and true third-party tools that have been in use for decades that do exactly that. So if we did the screening, and it was companies in the Midwest, et cetera, and we got our reduced universe, the tools do allow you to come back and predict. And you told us, my benchmark is Russell 1000, or whatever you said. We'd say how much the universe would be reduced and what your new tracking error would be. Yes, that's tried and true technology that we can use.
So as customers kind of come inbound to you, you talked a little bit about just asset thresholds that people need to be able to meet for it to have it make sense for them. What are most people coming in asking for? What are the first two or three questions? And maybe that's illustrative for some of the investors who are listening to this interview to understand how they might be able to either send folks your way or have a conversation about direct investing in a values-driven manner with some of their clients. Maybe just kind of where do people start typically?
Remember, we work with both investment advisors and with institutions. When the institutions come, it's always they come in with their values they want applied, and it's very targeted and specific. When an advisor comes, it depends. And we've had advisors come in, and all it is, it's only about tax alpha. That's what drives it. That's what they want to get, and we do that for them. And then some other advisors, it's mostly Christian clients, and they've had some client who's really important to them, that this issue is important to them, and they're finally realizing, you know, Verity can help us make this client happy. It could be they have a tax transition issue, because the direct indexing is a great multi-tool. It's not just put cash in the account. You can have some manager that's not done well for them, an active manager, pick it, and they want to migrate it to passive. And we can take in those positions, some very low basis, and migrate it into a direct indexing solution with a lot lower transition tax cost than they otherwise would have to pay, and start layering in values or whatever they want at the same time. So it's a real multi-tool to solve lots of problems.
Yeah. Well, the angle with advisors makes a ton of sense to me. I think as advisors, you know, there's clearly margin pressure in that industry. And I think there's a lot of folks that are reevaluating how they align either with the wirehouse or go independent to have a little bit more flexibility to deliver, you know, more customized solutions to their clients that they can't maybe inside of a major wirehouse. So I think that the value prop for RIAs is very clear to me. Is that where you see most of the growth in your sector? Is that why these other two front runners got bought?
Most of the growth has been in private client assets, but I've been surprised at the trajectory we have in the institutional space, and that's with mostly faith-based clients. And Verity is very responsive to that. So that's been a thrill for us. If you look at the major players, Parametric, I was talking to one of the Parametric staff just within the last, well, year and a half or so. And they said it was only about 10% of their overall assets that were being applied with values, which is a remarkably low percentage for all the talk you get in the marketplace. So that's changing, but that gives you an idea where the industry is now.
Yeah. So Dave, I'm grateful for a time. I'm grateful for you helping us to understand direct indexing, the opportunities. I hope that our listeners are thinking about different ways that this can apply to their portfolio and what are the different ways that their values might be able to impact the type of portfolio that they put together that would look to mirror an index, take advantage of some of the tax harvesting that you're talking about, and just participate more generally in the public equity space. Because again, so much of our focus on this podcast has been on the private equity space, which continues to be really, really compelling. But we find, of course, that our faith can guide us in every asset class, how we do our real estate investing, how we do our private equity investing, of course, how we can now understand how to do it with our public equity investing. So thank you for that. We look forward to staying in touch with you, hearing about the developments that you're seeing in the market, and just how faith-driven investors might be able to apply this to their portfolios. We'd like to close out every one of our interviews with asking our guests what they're hearing from God through His Word. And it doesn't need to be this morning, though it could be, but sometime within the last week or so, where you really feel that God is speaking to you. And then maybe some area that we can be praying for you about.
Thank you. It's interesting because in just the last couple weeks, I was marinating a bit on Romans 14. Now, that's where it talks about the strong and the weak brother, you know, who thinks that they can eat meat and who thinks that they shouldn't and so forth. And it really does apply to the conversations we have around faith-based investing, you know, to not judge one another, even when we have different opinions. It's just common, you know, have you ever disagreed with someone about what's allowable behavior? And, you know, the chapter really encourages us to come at it with love. And I'm both convicted by that. It also doesn't say, though, it doesn't deny Paul is really one who ate meat and thought it was fine. So he wasn't saying both positions were right. He was talking about how we love one another. So I've just been thinking about how that applies in the work we're trying to do together in faith-driven investing.
So that's very interesting. So maybe the extrapolation of that, of course, is somebody might say, gosh, my faith tells me that I shouldn't invest in anything that has a carbon footprint or produces things. And somebody else might not have that. And what your application here is that let's not be judgmental necessarily. Maybe there's some other areas that are maybe less in the gray, but maybe not. But your larger point is, what I'm hearing from you is that you're hearing from God that we're to be known for our love for one another, not to judge. What is helpful for somebody to come to know God in one instance may be different for somebody in another instance. And so let's make sure that we're erring on the side of loving and understanding and not judging.
That's right. And whatever our opinion, all of us in the end, that Romans 14 says, you know, every knee shall bow and every tongue give praise to God, whatever our opinion, which is probably a good note to end on.
Indeed. Indeed. Dave, I'm grateful for you. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. It's so good to be on this journey with you.
Thank you so much for joining us on today's show. We're very, very grateful for the opportunity to serve the larger faith-driven investor community. Hey, the best way for you to stay connected is to sign up for our monthly newsletter at faithdriveninvestor.org. And while you're there, we of course want to hear from you. We derive great joy from interacting with many of you, and it's been very rewarding to see people join the discussion now from all around the world. But it's also very important to us that you feel like this is your show and that you'll help make it something that best equips you on your journey, one that you're proud of and one that you'll share with others. This podcast, it wouldn't be possible without the help from many of our friends, executive producer Justin Foreman, program director Johnny Wills, music by Carl Kegwell. You can see and hear more of his work at summerdregs.com, and audio and editing by Richard Barley of Cornerstone Church in San Francisco.